Another episode of Chatting Rabbis after skipping a week because Mendy and I were so busy with our various Purim activities. This is Eliezer Zalmanov in Munster, Indiana, back for another week.
Mendy Chitrik from Istanbul, Turkey. You still sound as if you're still in a hangover for after Purim.
Yeah, Purim was pretty heavy over here. Thank God we had a very successful Purim, if we can call it that. We judge our successes by how many people we interacted with and how many people either attended our parties and our Megillah readings or how many people we visited and brought Shalach Manas to and read the Megillah for in the homes and in hospitals, etc. And also how many bottles of L'chaims we went through. So
that is how you measure success? I don't think so. You always say that success doesn't measure by the number of people that attend your event. I mean, weren't you texting me that this is the first time in 3-4 months that you had a minion?
Yeah, it's an interesting, dichotomy that we have. That yes, we judge success not so much by the numbers, but also by the influence, by the reach. We had we had like 60 people at our Purim party, for example, and we actually did interact with probably closer to 100 people over the duration of Purim because we visited homes and hospitals and the nursing homes, etc. But you're right that it's not about the numbers, it's about the influence. And I told you earlier this week that...
I don't think it's about the influence either, but yeah, what did you tell me this week?
I told you earlier this week that this past Shabbos was the first time we had a minyan in our Chabad house since, I think, during the month of Cheshvan, which was four months ago. And, we've gotten close almost every week. We have 8 or 9 every week, and this person doesn't come, and that person doesn't come, and I'm not blaming or faulting anybody for not coming. I'm thankful and appreciative when they do show up, but... to get everybody, all of our regulars in shul at the same time is almost as difficult as splitting the sea. So this past Shabbos, we had a pretty exact minyan. We had exactly 10. We had one person visiting, another person that out of the blue decided to show up. And so we had exactly 10 for our minyan. And by fluke, and I say this by fluke because I don't always have that much faith, but by fluke, in the morning before davening, I went to shul and I rolled both of our Sifrei Torah, both of our Torah scrolls, to the correct spot because we read from two Torahs this week, one for Parshas Kisisa and one for Parshas Parah, and neither of them were at the right spot because we hadn't had a minyan for a while. So on a fluke, I told my son a half hour before davening, let's go to shul early so we can roll them just in case we have a minyan. And he like rolls his eyes at me, yeah, as if we're going to have a minyan. But we did it, and maybe I should have done it all the other weeks that we didn't have. I would have showed that maybe I had faith, and maybe it would have happened. I didn't even roll our Sefer Torah to Parsha Zachar, because I was so convinced that we wouldn't have a minyan for it. And maybe I should have done that.
Some people do to Zachar, some people do to Parah.
Yeah.
But let me tell you why I disagree with you. Not, sometimes I... totally, completely disagree with you. Just a small note.
Okay.
So it is not, in my at least humble opinion or not so humble opinion, it's not about the reach, and it is not about the numbers, and it is not about the seemed success. It's about doing what you should be doing. That's for me. And then that's the thing. You know, every year, one of our most biggest events of the year is a Purim event, because somehow that's what happened, and we had huge Purim events here in Istanbul, sometimes attracting 3,000-4,000 people. A huge percentage of the Jews in the city attended. Last year, post COVID, we still had 600-700 people come to our Purim event, but this year, very few people. Because we didn't even have an event, because of the earthquake and because of the aftermath, when people are still in a time of mourning, and when you still have thousands of people who are still unaccounted for under the rubble, we couldn't have a big Purim bash in town. So we didn't. So yes, we did give out. Mishloach manos to people, to friends, supporters. We did read the Megillah several times in various hotels to different tourists in our home for many people. We did have Seudas Purim with, again, a nice turnout of friends and family. I don't remember everything because I'm blank of the last couple hours. I woke up the next morning and I didn't have much of a recollection. I'm still happy that those friends who did it and do talk to me.
And they're still friends.
I hope so. I didn't reach out to everybody. But so it's not about the numbers, not about how much influence you have, and it's not how much how far and deep is your reach out. It's how deep you reach in. Have you done? Have I done? I'm talking to you as to me. Have I done whatever is required of me in any given moment? Am I, as a shliach, as a chassid, as a Jew, responsible for my own actions? Am I fulfilling my time, or am I wasting it browsing the Twitter world or listening to meaningless podcasts or doing some wasting my time when I could do what is required of me? And if you do what is required of you, whether you have a turnout of 5 to 5,000 to anywhere in between or more or less, then you are doing what you're supposed to.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. But, we're human beings. And
are we?
Most of the time. I think that we need to have some kind of satisfaction. In other words, it's not the mission. Numbers is not the mission, but numbers gives us the satisfaction to continue the mission. So, you know, I've been tempted more than once to cancel or suspend our weekly Shabbos minyan because we haven't been getting a minyan. And obviously, I wouldn't do that. I've been tempted to because I'm human and I feel like, why am I doing this and we don't have a minyan? But of course, for the few people that do show up, whether it's 8 or 9 men and a handful of women and a few kids, it's special for them. And, you know, if the rabbi is sad, if the rabbi is depressed, and if the rabbi is in a bad mood, then that's going to turn them off even further and even more so. God forbid for that to happen. So you put on your game face and you make yourself in a good mood, and that's where having a little l'chaim helps. But seeing results and actually having tangible satisfaction makes it easier. It's kind of what the mefarshim, what the commentators say on Parshas Bechukosai. At least one of the interpretations is, why does God keep promising us material rewards for keeping the mitzvahs? And one of the interpretations, one of the explanations is that it's not so much as a reward for performing the mitzvah, but rather Hashem, God, promises us that if we commit to following Torah and mitzvahs, He will remove any obstacles that would have otherwise prevented us from performing these mitzvahs. So perhaps in the same way, and I'm just shooting from the hip over here, perhaps in the same way, when we have the satisfaction of success, even if it's small successes, and of course it's all in your mind, it's in the mindset. If you have that satisfaction, then it makes things go easier. And I was once talking to a musician friend, someone who's a performer, and he plays, he has concerts 3-4 times a week, and he's on stage for 2-3 hours at a time, and he plays guitar, and he's jumping and dancing and singing and hulaing a little bit, Kol Yom Purim, every day is a celebration, every day is like Purim for him. And I was having a heart-to-heart talk with him once, and I asked him, you do this 3-4 times a week, 50 weeks a year. What happens if you're not in the mood? Mm-hmm. How do you get up on stage and start singing and dancing and rocking? He was a rock musician. Like, you're playing rock and roll and you're not in the mood. You have problems at home. You have problems with with parnasa, with your making a living. Everybody has issues. Everybody has various concerns on their mind all the time. Yes, there are times that you're really in the mood, but what happens? You show up at your concert and you're not in the mood. So most people, unfortunately, most performers, most celebrities, they imbibe and they take various substances to put them in the mood, put them in the
like
right mindset.
Like drink.
Yes, perhaps. Perhaps, but this guy wasn't like that. He's a straight shooter. He was very, very, you know, clean, sober. You know, he had a little l'chaims with me, but he definitely doesn't do drugs. And he says, you know, you just put yourself in the mindset. You know, this is what I'm doing now. And then he tells me, like, you're a rabbi, and you come to shul. And what if you're not in the mood of speaking to your crowd? What if you're not in the mood of giving your class? You're going to do it anyway. You're going to get up there, and you're going to speak, and you're going to teach, and you're going to inspire, because that's what you do. So as a musician, he says, that's what I do. You're right that sometimes having a little l'chaim does help. And especially on, you know, like Simchas Torah and Purim, when we go beyond the typical. But even every Shabbos after davening, where we sit down, whether it's 5 people in shul or 20 people in shul, we sit down and we have a Fabringen, and we have a Kiddush, and we have some L'chaims, and that definitely helps. I'm not going to say that it's the perfect solution, but it helps.
So you are very pro the capitalist approach of having incentives. And having physical incentives are going to move you ahead and propel you from one spiritual step to another. And I am more of the communist type who says that you got to do what you got to do. And the spiritual, the physical incentives are very good for your body and for your ego, but are less good for your soul.
But you still need the physical body and the ego to be on board. Because if they're not on board, then good luck convincing your soul to do it.
Exactly, so that is why the glasnost failed after 70 years, or the communists failed until the glasnost. But you're right, so definitely a person wants to find reason and motivation and physical things. But still, let's bring the conversation down to earth. I still think that at the end of the day, you had the Purim, what will make you happy is less how many people you have reached, and more, have I done whatever I could to do what I can? And in most cases, when you take these two things together, it does bring the results.
Yes, but sometimes that can actually be more depressing. When you're like, oh man, I could have done more. I should have done more. Yes, so next time you will do more and you'll remember your mindset afterwards.
And of course, we also know the failure. Sometimes you do more and nothing happens as a result. That happens right. Too. That happens too. As a very famous Chabad saying is, it's better not having anybody showing up to your advertised class than having one person showing up to your advertised class. That's because the newspaper the next morning could say 50, but if you have only one, the newspaper could say 1.
Right. A friend of ours who has a similar community like mine said that he has 2 kids in his Hebrew school. You know, every Sunday, 2 children show up, two families, more than 2 kids, but 2 families. And he said when he gets a phone call on Sunday morning from one family that we're not coming, he's like, oh, now I'm going to have to be sitting here for 3 hours with one family. Right. So the first family calls to cancel, it's oy vey. But then a half hour later, the second family calls to cancel, and you're like, you know what? Okay, I can breathe now. But you're right. It's all about putting in the effort. It's all about doing your best. But you know, the Rebbe always told us that if you do your best and you don't see results, then maybe you didn't do your best. Maybe your best wasn't good enough. So it's good to convince ourselves that we're trying and we're doing our best, and nobody shows up. It's not our fault. We did our thing. But at the end of the day, I think both components, both elements are necessary. And you can't live life only on one track.
That's right. You can't live life only on one track. But then you have to keep yourself, boosted. And you have to keep yourself motivated. And you have to move from step to step. And together with all that, together with all this motivation, together with all this boosting, and together with all this self-promotion, and together with all this, wow, I've reached 100 of people, or 100 people, or 60 people in my sphere, and I was able to influence them to listen to Megillah, to put on tefillin, to do this. It's all great, and the question is, but if you slept 2 hours in the afternoon on Purim, and instead of giving some more shalach monos and reaching one more person, or knocking on somebody's door who did not open the door, then you missed the boat.
Yeah, that's 100% true, and... We sometimes we're lazy,
I'm not saying that I am the Mr. Not Lazy. I am okay.
I know we have the same genes. I understand.
I have a double and set.
Yeah, we've been there before. but yeah, you're right. The motivation sometimes is to get out and do what you have to do. It's kind of a tangent, a side note. One of the people that we visited on Purim morning is an old friend of ours, an old Jew in his 80s, who was for the last 6 years, we would visit him a lot, and he was very, very close to us. He loved my kids. My kids loved him. And he was actually the engineer and the architect that designed our Chabad house. So we had a very, very special place in our hearts for him and him for us. About a half a year ago, his wife passed away. She was sick for a long time. She had Alzheimer's, and he was totally healthy. He was fine. Everything was good. Then, a few months after his wife passed away, suddenly he got sick and he started deteriorating. He was back home. He was getting better, supposedly. So we would visit him every Friday. For years, we would visit him, him and his wife. We'd bring them challah and chicken soup before Shabbos. But recently, when he was sick, I made an effort to spend a little bit more time with him and to bring my kids. My son, Davi, who's 13 years old, we would love talking baseball with him. It was a common language that they had. And on Purim morning, I called him. I said, we have some yeshiva bachram over here, and they want to come read the Megillah for you. He says, sure, absolutely, come over. I'm doing so much better now. I'm able to walk around. I'm sitting at the kitchen table. Come over. Anyway, we came over, me and the few yeshiva bachram and my son. We came in and we read the Megillah for him, and we gave him shalach manas, and we put on tefillin with him. And yesterday morning, I got a call from his son, who's also a good friend of ours, that his father passed away.
Oy.
And, I was in the car with my son when he called, and he was on speakerphone. And my son, who, children generally don't or shouldn't experience such kind of losses in their life. But my son heard that. He felt like it was like his own personal loss. He was so friendly with this old Jew, and he loved talking to him, and they chatted like best friends for so many years. But at the end of the day, like you said, we do what we can. We showed up at his house on Purim morning, and we read the Megillah for him, and we put on tefillin one last time. And it is what it is.
Sad story, but good story. On the other hand, if you would have not have made that call and wouldn't reach out to him, you'd feel even worse.
Exactly, and that's kind of where I was going. Like there have been plenty of such missed opportunities in the past, and I'm thankful that at least in this case we didn't miss the opportunity. Actually, speaking of missed opportunities, I just remember this, and it actually has a Turkish connection. A few months ago, I got a text from a relative of mine in New York, who's a shliach in Long Island, that. Long story how we met this person, but basically there's a Jew living in a place called Ogden Dunes, Indiana, which is about 40 minutes from here. And it's a gated community. It's a secluded community. This relative of mine met this Jew at his sister's funeral or something in New York. And this person living here has an elderly father in his 90s who's a Turkish Jew. And the Turkish elderly Jew is on his deathbed. He's getting very, very, he's very old. He's very sick, and they want him to come put on. He wants to put on tefillin one last time before he expires. And I was in touch with the son. I'm gonna come one day. I'm gonna come another day. Then one day we had a massive snowstorm over here, so I couldn't drive the day that I was gonna go. And then the next day I said, okay, the storm cleared. The roads are clear. I'm coming. And he says, unfortunately, my father passed away this morning. So there are sometimes missed opportunities too, and you obviously you can't get those back, but like you said, you do what you can, and you hope that you don't miss the boat when it presents itself.
Right, and that's the worst when you say, could have done, I was too lazy, and I didn't.
Right, you blamed it on the snowstorm, but yeah.
Too many of these. I don't even want to think about it. I'm not sharing the story that's on the tip of my tongue. I'm too embarrassed of myself.
All right.
And I feel bad and brings cringes in my heart. So I'm not going to talk about it. There's such things happen too.
Okay, that's fine. As long as we know ourselves what they are. Exactly. So the bottom line is don't miss the opportunities. And if an opportunity presents itself, take it. do what you're supposed to do. If you see good results, if you see positive results, if you see something tangible as a result of your action, then it's a great motivation, it's an incentive. And if you don't see the results that you wanted, then you can either blame it on Hashgacha Pratis, and that's the way it was supposed to be, or you can take it to heart and take an accounting, a cheshbon ha'nefesh, and see what we could have done better.
So, we'll take a very sharp turn from this very non-Purim-dik conversation that we're having here. So, right after Purim, we took my wife and my kids and myself, and we flew to Israel and met with the rest of our family. We are 8 siblings. I live in Turkey. I have a next in line, my brother Eliezer lives in Germany. Next lives in Boca Raton, and the next is in Thailand, Koh Samui, Thailand. One after that is in St. Pete, Russia. One after that is in Israel. Another one after that is in Fort Lauderdale, and the one after that is in or was until recently in Ukraine, and now is wandering around. And it doesn't happen very often that all of us come together. And my father said that, its time has come. After 2 years of a pandemic, and before that, other things. So we now, after many, many years, we all, 8 siblings and their spouses and their children, and my parents' 44 grandchildren, all gathered in my parents' home in Tzfas. They built a little tent for the boys to sleep in, and other mattresses. We crammed in. They have a nice size house, so it's okay, but we still crammed, having 65 people in the same place. And we spent a whole wonderful Shabbos together in the spirit of Hakel.
Yeah, I think that after your father, your parents had this idea for your family, my parents piggybacked on the idea and are also hosting a hakel for my entire extended family this weekend. We're actually all of my siblings, a little bit smaller family. We're only 5 siblings. We're all joining a hakel gathering, a hakel family reunion, which also hasn't happened since before COVID. All of my siblings and spouses and all of our children and our grandchildren, even those in yeshiva, are being given permission to come to leave a little early for Pesach, so that we have the entire family. And also, it's not as big as your family, but I think we're going to be about 40 people. And we rented a house in Orlando. And it should be nice. And, everybody does hakel in a different way, this year being a year that the Rebbe emphasized the importance of gatherings. And once your family was doing it, I guess my family decided to jump on the bandwagon too. So it should be very nice being with family, being with brothers and sisters and brothers-in-law and sisters-in-law and nieces and nephews. And we have an in-house minion, which is also special, should be nice.
And this is something interesting. I'm the oldest sibling, as you are. And while I learned in yeshiva, when I left yeshiva to learn in yeshiva when I was 13, my youngest sibling wasn't born yet. The second to the youngest was a year old, was born after my bar mitzvah. So we haven't really, we did not grow up in the same place.
Same parents, but a different household.
It's something that I think it's kind of scary. I'm thinking about my own kids. If I have a 3-year-old and a 21-year-old, and there are 18 years between them. And I feel sometimes there is some missed opportunity here.
So that's why it's important sometimes from top down to make it happen. Like, if my parents or if your parents wouldn't have pushed for these kind of reunions, then it wouldn't happen because we would each go on with our lives. But because our parents feel that's important, and they probably got it from their parents, the importance of family and being in touch and being together. So we were thankful that we have that opportunity. And hopefully when we're older and our kids are grown up and all out of the house and have their own families, we'll also still be able to come together and know each other.
Right. The other thing is that we didn't really have any bar mitzvahs to celebrate together, because sometimes, you know, bar mitzvahs, weddings, they cause their own hackles from time to time. We didn't have that in like 5-6 years. And so we all came without a bar mitzvah, just a hackle. Just everybody got together. We had a beautiful time in Israel, in Tzfat. We had our own minyan. We had our own get-together, own argument, own... everything was our own. The funny thing is that some of our kids, you know, don't really know their first cousins. And that is the sad part. Some of them don't even have a shared language. Some speak Russian, some speak German, some speak Hebrew, some speak English, some speak Turkish.
Wow. But listen, that's why you have these gatherings, and it should always be for simchas and for happy occasions. Yeah. And you know, look for a reason. Sometimes you have to force it, but look for reasons to get together. And after your weekend, everybody's still talking.
After weekend, everybody's still talking. We actually have a sibling chat every Friday afternoon. We all go on a WhatsApp video call. Most of us get on every week, and you know, just for a few minutes to see each other, so we know what's going on and we are in touch with each other. But still, having a spending a weekend, a long weekend together, definitely boosted up this brotherly feeling, emotion, etc. I'm thankful for that. Baruch Hashem.
Wonderful. Baruch Hashem. All right. Catch you next time.
Gotta start giving out matzah.
Yes, sir. Already started.
Let's not be lazy about that.
Right? The earlier you start, the more ground you cover.
It's not about the more ground you cover. It's about not being lazy. I'm sorry. Wait.
after this whole conversation, and I'm still going back to that. Okay. Very good.
All right. Take care.
Zay gesund.